not only our programs and what we're doing, but also how we are gaining better oversight. So I do look forward to working with you and throughout the session, and would be available and appreciate the opportunity that you've given us to come and present OET. I'm going to pass on the mic to my associate, John Lally.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is John Lally, Planning Director for the Office of Enterprise Technology, and I'm going to walk through, first of all, a very brief introduction, particularly for the new members, to the Office of Technology and what we do, and then talk a little bit about our oversight responsibilities and mechanisms, and then I understand you have some specific inquiries about project oversight and oversight of the data center proposals in our budget. Our mission in state government is to provide leadership and services to improve government through effective use of information technology. We don't own the technology, but we are here to try to facilitate and guide so that they do the best job possible in accomplishing the state's business. We know that the business of state government is not IT. It is law enforcement, public education, public health, and all the other things. But the role of information in our society today and the importance of technology in managing that information makes it essential that we have an element of coordination across the entity of state government. Our vision in this effort is to be considered by our customers, which are primarily state agencies, to be the leader in enterprise technology and the provider of choice for those services. But we can talk about that a little bit as we go on through the presentation. We offer services in four areas. Each one of them is dictated either by statute or by administrative policy. The first is leadership, and that is particularly in the person of the state CIO, where we have responsibilities for statewide IT policy, enterprise planning, including the development of the master plan, enterprise governance around IT, and information security, one of our key and highest priority areas. Second is an area of compliance and standards, and this includes some very critical areas like information architecture, which is essential to the interoperability of systems and to achieving the kind of consolidation of technologies that gives us the stability and economy we need, as well as products and standards, contracts and vendor management, compliance with security standards, which is one of the ways we try to ensure the integrity of our system, portfolio management, the responsibility for tracking what the state's information assets are, and also project oversight. We also have marketplace services where we are a vendor for state agencies, where we provide services like hosting applications, data storage and backup and recovery, applications that are tied to individual customers and for which they pay. And in this case, we run as much as possible, although we don't have quite the same freedom, we run as much as possible like any private IT vendor might. And finally, we offer utility services to all of the states, including the legislature, around areas of telecommunication services, the integration of voice, video, and data, for example, and enterprise email. And that's a major area of our involvement. Our agency strategies to accomplish this mission are to become a provider of choice, which is harder than it sounds because we are trying to be both competitive with the market and as well as offer the unique advantages as the central IT providers for the state. We need to rebuild our customer-facing processes and channels of communication. For those of you who were here last year, you recall that we had done a fairly grueling examination both of ourselves and using outside consultants from the Department of Administration to identify what we needed to do to be better at our job. And the answers were both a little harsher than we'd hoped and a little more extensive than we would have liked, but it gave us a pretty clear picture of what the needs were. And so we're starting to act and act aggressively to try to change that picture of the old Office of Enterprise Technology. We have to improve our financial system. The rate-setting process is an open process, but it's hardly transparent. It is so complex. It takes 6 months to develop the rate structure for each year. It involves a I don't want to call it an arcane system, but it is certainly a highly complex system of linked spreadsheets, nothing like what we want to do. And it also produces billing systems that are difficult for our customers to understand. So we are making changes in financial management, both to identify more accurately what the costs are of running our operation, as well as to help our customers understand what they're being charged for. We are also attempting to advance a limited number of high priority enterprise service initiatives. One of the criticisms that has been offered of OEP is that we try to be all things to all people, and we simply lack the capabilities and the resources to do that. So we're having to prioritize and address only the things that are most important to the enterprise. And to do that, we have to work through our internal governance process. And finally, that governance process itself has matured a lot since Mr. Tata came on board 3.5 years ago, but we still have a ways to go to make sure that those customer perspectives are represented in all of the activities that we undertake. What are we doing to improve? Trying to manage three primary channels that we face. One is the customer focus. Customer service is more than a matter of putting up banners and slogans. It is about listening to customers, responding to their needs, making sure our performance measures up to their expectations, and that we deliver value for the dollars, because those are taxpayer dollars that they pay for our services. That business value has two elements to it. One is that our prices are reasonably competitive, and the value that we add as the center of state IT is sufficient to make that an equation that our customers are happy with. And finally, the quality of governance, again, to tie all this together in recognition of the fact that OEP is no longer a monopoly. 20 years ago or 30 years ago, when everything was a mainframe service, OEP was the center of the IT universe. That center has become somewhat dissipated with the changes in technology, and we're attempting to respond to those now. What we're doing to make these changes happen, and these are both organizational and technological changes, but more profoundly, they're cultural changes in the organization, is ongoing assessment of our customer needs and our own capacity to make sure they match up, and where we do not have the capacity or the capability to offer service, to make sure that somebody else is providing that service and at a reasonable cost. So the managing of those kinds of external vendors is something we're undertaking to do a better job in. We want to take every opportunity to compare ourselves to industry norms and best practices, not just in the public sector, but also in the private sector, where there are some excellent models to follow, and we want to learn from those and apply those experiences to our own environment. We want to take advantage of the skills and experience and perspective of all of our employees in state government, and there is a great deal of skill and experience there. But we also recognize we have a significant development effort to try to make them better and to make us prepared for the future. We are trying to get to the point where our plan of action represents the priorities for the administration and the requirements within the statutory bounds of OEP, which are broad, to say the least. And finally, we want to implement a discipline change process so that we don't move in a helter-skelter fashion to get changes in technology, but rather do it in a planful way and as much as possible integrating the services to multiple agencies. We have some advantages in our operating environment. We know the business side very well of state government. We know the technology side pretty well. There are still areas where we have to develop more, particularly in some of the interactive technologies. We share the commitment of the state agencies to public service. We provide continuity. I didn't get these gray hairs by just coming into state government. We have a very mature staff. They've been around a long time, and they have worked with successive generations of both technology and applications. And we offer a competitive price package generally. It's not exactly the freedom of the open market. We have things we have to do regardless of, like the post office, regardless of whether we show quite the profit and loss on those individual services. But overall, our prices are competitive. We've introduced something since last we met with you called the Change Project. Not a very fancy name, but we could have talked about it as a Phoenix Project or something like that and conjured up all sorts of images. It's just the Change Project. But the Change Project is a very significant thing for us because it's involving standardization of business processes. There is in the technology industry something called ICIL, which is Information Technology Infrastructure Library. And it's a set of operating standards for all the business processes managing technology. In the past, our business processes were as many as our services, and they were duplicative, they were inefficient. Some of them were dead ends for customers. We're trying to build on these model business processes, implement model tools, and use them across OEP and eventually across the enterprise for greater efficiency and commonality. We're putting the strong focus, you'll hear this over and over from us, on customer service, and that means owning up to our mistakes and as well as working with the agency to make sure they're getting what they need from us. That involves performance measurement, which has never been a strong suit in state government. We measure the things that are easy to count. We don't necessarily measure the things that matter. We're trying to get to the point that what we measure are outcomes, and those outcomes are related to our mission. Prioritization, establishing the internal discipline to not take on everything or not give everything equal weight. If everything is high priority, essentially nothing is high priority, and there are clearly priorities both within the executive branch and within state government as a whole that we're trying to advance. And again, governance process, working with the agencies, working with legislative committees to make sure that what we're doing is the way it needs to be done to benefit the citizens of Minnesota. And finally, a functional reorganization. I've grown up in 30-some years in state government to recognize that reorganization is also a very effective alternative to meaningful action. In this case, we're trying to reorganize around business processes and around functions, not around historical artifacts or the way we've always done it or to protect people that have been here the longest. So we are undertaking a functional reorganization. It goes into effect. Some pieces of it went into effect last month, but the balance of it goes into effect the 18th of this month and will reflect the priorities that I talked about and strategies I talked about. Essentially, we are reorganizing around 5 key business process areas. This remarkable change for us involves not a lot of new assets and resources, but transferring assets to those priority areas of customer service and financial management and so on, away from a highly disintegrated business process that reflects individual services to one where we will offer to our customer agencies representatives that understand their business and understand our technology and can act as the interface with them. This will make, we think, for better performance and more accountability for OEP with its customers generally. Tied to that customer and service management function is security management. I think many of you have known Chris Boozy, our Chief Information Security Officer. That is one of the most aggressive parts of our department as they're moving to address the very many security problems within the state. Technology management is the service delivery portion. You used to know it and love it as Intertechnologies Group. This is everything from mainframe and server hosting networks, all the hardwire, the pipes and boxes sort of things of OEP. That is now a smaller group than it was before because we've moved these other functions out, centralized them, and tried to make them more efficient. Financial management, we talked about the need for greater transparency and accountability within how we manage the rate system and how we charge for the services we provide. That has been developed as a separate program. And finally, technology development, which includes a very much stronger architecture process than we had before. We have centralized our key architectural components and are developing the enterprise architecture where it should have been 10 years ago. It also includes the standards group that has led the development of statewide contracts that save millions of dollars to agencies and local government units and school districts for procurement. And it also includes application management and our project management and oversight functions. Our funding, most of our funding, 90-some percent of it, comes from rates that our customers pay, just like any other private sector service delivery function. There's a rate process that involves the customers heavily. It's overseen by the Department of Management and Budget, and each year we come up with a rate structure that is tied to volume, capacity, the computing cycles. It's thousands of items in there on a service menu, and for each one of them we have to identify a rate, and so they know what they're paying for and know what they're going to get for that money. 8% of our budget, which is our total budget, is $90 some million. 8% of that is general fund, and it's largely the leadership and oversight function and enterprise security. And when we get to the financial presentation of our budget at a later date, we can go into that in greater detail. This is just a graphic way of showing that the enterprise technology fund, which is the revolving fund, the rate-based operation, is by far the majority of our funding base. Through that, we attempt to get greater efficiency and reduce the cost on both a unit basis and a collective basis for the services we offer. We're doing that through stronger vendor management and contract negotiation, and we will be accentuating that with the new financial management program. We are already leveraging enterprise procurement. We've talked about that in the past, and the benefits that come from consolidation of demand and standardization, so that we can get greater unit value when we negotiate with vendors directly, and reducing the number of vendors to get the greatest leverage. The opportunity for us to have more competitive pricing or to introduce to customers new service providers other than OET has helped keep costs down, ours and theirs. And we've also worked towards achieving internal operating enhancements, partly through tools based on IDLE and COBIT and other standards like that, through introduction of technologies to replace all the old systems that were developed on an ad hoc basis over 30 years. And all of these reductions are reflected in the rates we charge. Last year, the comparative rate change last year was about $1.5 million that we reduced because of these efficiencies. So that's the general overview of the department. We have about 340 employees, most of whom are technology people, which means we don't let them out in public very often. They're very knowledgeable and experienced and skilled group of people. The balance of us are people that work with policy and customer service and so on. When we get into the budget discussions with you, we will be talking about a couple of significant governor's initiatives that go to address some of the issues that we've identified here, but we'll save that for our next meeting with you. One of the things that we were told you wanted to talk about at some length today was how we do project oversight for enterprise projects. And our role here, again, is somewhat bifurcated. We have projects by the hundreds that we do internally, raising from small technical projects to fairly large systems that, for the customers we serve. But we also have an oversight role under the law on agency development applications they develop. It is not a role that we do well. I will say that up front. Our resources are extremely limited in that respect. We've worked in the past with Representative Winkler and Senator Rest on trying to expand the capabilities for the very large system. But the fact is that we are overseeing the operation of about a $500 million annual IT enterprise with three people. And that's something less than what we would like to do. But I'll talk a little bit about how we accomplish that and what we try to do and some of the principles we operate by, and then I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have. If you ask most people how do they like oversight, their response is going to be they don't. They consider it an intrusion in their freedom to operate. And this is true of state agencies as well as individuals and private sector companies. Nobody particularly likes oversight. But oversight is essential. It's, for us, a major risk management strategy for the state. It's how we control our exposure. It's how we control or attempt to control expenditures and keep them from getting out of hand. And it's the best insurance policy the state can have. But oversight can't be tacked on at the end. You can't come in after a project is done and with the 2020 vision that is a product of hindsight say, well, you should have made this decision 2 years ago. Oversight has to be part of the process. It has to be integral, particularly in the case of IT projects, to the systems development process from the very beginning to the very end. And so it must be considered one of the essentials of good project management. It goes throughout the life cycle of the project. You can't be a dilettante and just kind of dabble in the project from time to time. You have to understand the business decisions that are made and be part of that discussion throughout the project. While the determination of what systems you should develop is a business decision, not a technology decision, it's up to the agency to decide what their business priorities are and for the administration as a whole to look across agencies. The purpose of oversight is not to make those decisions. It is to help make sure they are executed well and executed according to what are commonly accepted standards in the industry. And also, I want to make clear from our standpoint, we don't attempt to interfere with the responsibility of agencies to manage their own system. If we're managing a system for them, that's a different matter than a different element of responsibility. But our job is not to intervene and to run their project development. It is to review it, monitor it, offer advice, give warning to their agency management if we see a project going down the wrong path, but it is not to take over their responsibilities for running their own agency. The problem is, first of all, there's a perception that government cannot manage IT projects. That is a very commonly held perception. And part of it is the only projects you ever hear about are the ones that don't go right. But the fact is, when an IT project goes wrong, it can be very embarrassing, and worse, it can be very expensive. And if you've looked at some of the projects in other states that have run up $100 million worth of failed projects, it suggests that there is perhaps room for improvement in the oversight process. Minnesota's had its share of those, although less, I will tell you, than many other states. The reality is that some of our projects in Minnesota have lacked the basics for good project management, good project definition, proper controls within the agencies and overall, and sound project management methodologies and skill sets. The reality is that we can get better at what we're doing. Interagency coordination and cooperation is better than it's been in the past. It is not as good as it needs to be for the sake of our common constituents. Each project that is undertaken in the IT world has commonalities, but they also have a lot of unique characteristics tied to the business that they're implementing, and it's important to recognize there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to doing IT projects. There are common methodologies, but you can't just superimpose one technology or one application on another situation and expect it to run seamlessly. We know that architecture, a common information architecture for the state, and project standards, they exist within the private sector. We've adopted them for the state. They're well-known and well-documented. They can improve performance in projects, but without oversight, even architecture and standards are not sufficient to ensure compliance with those standards and with that architecture. Currently, OEP has five basic means of addressing the issues of oversight. We publish a master plan which offers strategic guidance that should be coming to you in the next few days, I hope. It's done. It's up in the governor's office right now. The master plan is to try to offer an integrating environment for agency development so that we move, where possible, using common applications and at least common standards to ensure that we have interoperability of both applications and data and that we're moving down the same path. For example, our strategies a couple of years ago were in favor of enterprise email rather than the 60 or 70 email systems of the existing state government. Another strategy is for the consolidation of data centers, and it's bearing fruit in the governor's initiative this session. We have other initiatives around migrating to common electronic government services platform to make government more accessible to our citizens. These are all some of the major strategies that are in the master plan. We also have an enterprise project portfolio where we have, as a matter of policy, a requirement that agencies register projects and report regularly on them. That's a start, but the project portfolio is not complete, and we do not have the resources to spend the time bird-dogging it, because you have to have that follow-up on oversight. But it exists out there, and you see that in the portfolio reports that will be coming to you, I think week after next, it'll be coming here, identifies both applications and information assets and systems, plans, and projects that are underway in state government and what their current status is. We also undertake an initiative review as part of the budget process so that as initiatives are proposed, we look at them for their technical feasibility and for the agency readiness to undertake those projects. The governance process itself helps to integrate activities across agency boundaries in ways that haven't been possible in the past. And finally, and probably the piece that you're most interested in, for major systems, we do have a project review process that we go through where we assign our most senior project managers to work closely with agencies around the major projects and to give them advice and guidance and report back to the CIO on the progress of those projects. We've developed generally a very good working relationship with most of the agencies that we do this for. Unfortunately, we don't go deep enough. I will tell you that right now. And so there are a lot of mid-sized projects that have only intermittent involvement with OET because of that. We know that looking across projects, both the IT projects and any kind of major project, a well-planned project with a disciplined project process is much more likely to be successful. We can predict which projects or what projects are going to fail and why just by being involved with them, because the symptoms are fairly obvious to people if you're objective about it. And I'm going to talk, I think the next slide, a little bit about why projects fail. Scope creep, which is very common in IT projects, and failure to achieve goals, are functions of planning and communication, and especially project discipline. Projects do not have to go bad if they're planned. Any planning methodology and project management methodology that is followed, and there are many of them, is better than a very good project methodology that is not employed. So it doesn't matter if you're using an over-the-counter project like project management package like Microsoft Project, or if you're doing it the way I learned to do it 25 or 30 years ago with spreadsheets. The fact is, it's the discipline and the controls that are imposed by that planning process that make it valuable. And finally, we have to have the follow-through on project oversight, or projects tend to drift. You very rarely find a technology project that goes bad out the chute. Over time, they start to drift away from their objectives or get out of control or lose focus. And a proper oversight process and the proper project discipline will pull those projects back. We have the power, you've given us the authority, to shut down a project and to intervene in a bad project. If it gets to that point, we've already failed, because our goal should be to identify projects when they start to go bad, to get involved with them and try to bring them back on track. The nightmare everybody has is the kind of situation you've seen in a couple states where they do the $150 million project, and at the end it doesn't work, so they crash it and start all over again. That's an abject failure of both oversight and project management. That doesn't happen, happily, here very often, but it can happen, and it can happen to any of the agencies that are involved for any of their systems. Why do projects fail? There's no secret here. There's nothing magical about this. Projects fail because they don't define their project scope and deliverables and the requirements they have and the objectives they have to meet, and don't stick to that once it's done. They fail because of lack of project leadership. If it's delegated, if it's not followed through, if you have, frankly, people that don't have the skills to manage this complex process, the project can fail. That's not the most common cause of failure. failure to get managerial ownership, active engagement, and organizational support is a very common reason why projects fail. If people say, well, I'm the executive sponsor, and I've been the executive sponsor of a couple of major projects, I'm the executive sponsor, come back to me in 3 months and tell me how it's going. You don't have the buy-in, you don't have the ownership, you don't have the leadership for that project to be successful. Failure to commit resources consistent with the desired ends is partly a function of available resources and partly a function of defining your scope properly to balance off. I will tell you, as an agency person of many years' experience, sometimes people try to sell us projects, and sometimes you fund projects at less than what it's going to take to do it right. And so the issue is, do you do it poorly or do you not do it at all? We've tried to encourage them, if you can't do it well for the money that's available, don't do it. In some cases, you don't have that choice. You have to make something happen because there's a program need that has to be met or an urgency that requires that involvement. But you have to understand there's a high initial risk by not having adequate resources. Underestimating the complexity, it happens very often, particularly in government programs, where if you look at the complexity of the legal requirements and the technical requirements and the customer requirements, it becomes almost nightmarish watching those things interact. And particularly in a dynamic environment like government, where the requirements change, federal requirements change, state requirements change on an annual or even more frequent basis, it's what you're trying to accomplish is a moving target. And it's often very hard to remember by the end of the project what you started out to do at the beginning of the project because your environment has changed. Lack of performance measures and milestones is also a common reason why projects fail. You lose track of where you are. You have to have a roadmap for your project that can tell you where you are and where you expect it to be. And if you begin to see a divergence in there, it becomes a key indicator to you that there's intervention is involved. And inability to control the environmental changes affecting the project. That includes everything from massive changes in technology to the requirements that are imposed by bodies like the Minnesota Legislature or agency direction and executive branch priorities. All those things can affect how a project's going to go. And finally, and the one that we tend to blame most frequently because it's very easy to do, is vendor capability and vendor capacity. But often we do have in a low bid situation where we're getting the vendor who is marginally capable of doing the work. That happens. Sometimes you can rescue it by Herculean efforts. Sometimes you have problems and you have to intervene. But that is something that gets back to having clear specifications up front and a very rigorous change management program so that you don't let the scope get out of control. What we try to do, and I emphasize try, because I know we don't do it as well as we would like, we try to see that agencies adhere to their design and schedule and budget in what they do with the project.
If I want to interject here with a question, and apologize to committee members for a couple of things that I meant to do and then didn't, which is one, we also look at the statutes that govern this agency, and we'll you know, get the copies of the relevant part. I mean, I know you can find it yourself, but we'll get them out to you certainly before our next meeting. The other point is I remember the last time, and I hate to say how long ago it was, but I think you and I were both involved in it, there was some real problem with a project. We put a whole bunch of separate steps in where you had to do things like you had to hire an outside risk manager certain things, and maybe just comment on some of those. And I also think we really took you out of any low bid requirements.
Madam Chair, there are in statute now requirements around risk management, and as a result, again, as Representative Winkler and Senator Retzko last year, some additional options for agencies that engage oversight functions for larger projects. The whole issue of vendors is complicated because we have hardware and contract vendors and software purchasing, and the opportunity that we have now is to find the best match, not necessarily the cheapest source. And that is a very significant improvement. Not every state has that, and we're grateful for that flexibility. There are in the statutory requirements for OEP an enormous number of responsibilities that we don't do. We simply do not do them. We don't have the resources to do them well, and doing them badly adds no value. So we prioritize our efforts, and we try to put the resources we have where they think they have the greatest impact. That doesn't necessarily mean that the statutes are bad or should be renewed, and certainly, much as I would love to beg you for the additional resources, it means you have to double our budget or something like that to make that happen. But the fact is there's a disconnect between capacity and demand when it comes to particularly the oversight and leadership function. I'm going to show you a model in a moment here that I think may get to some of the points Representative Kahn has been making. This is the project process that we're talking to agencies about trying to put into place, and it has a series of decision gates that are milestones in the project process. And the idea for this, of course, is that you have a structured decision process with, at each point, a milestone and an approval process that doesn't let things get out of hand. So if you look at this process, the first part of it is identifying the situation and coming to the conclusion, is there a problem or opportunity here? And that sounds pretty basic, and I suspect for most agencies it is. But in some cases, people chase symptoms of problems rather than address the causes of problems. And they'll look for solutions that are tied to apparent needs rather than the real needs. So this is to try to put some structured analysis up front. The time to plan a project is not after it's initiated. It's before you initiate it. As part of that, we want to come up with a business case methodology that requires us to apply a rigorous discipline to identifying if we're going to do something, if we've got a situation that demands or suggests attention, is there a case for action? Should we take some significant action and commit the resources to doing something different or new? And if so, what's the best solution for doing that? And again, there should be a rigorous process tied to the requirements that helps you identify the best solution. The best solution may not be implementable if you don't have the resources, but at least you can try to get the best match of resources and solutions, software, hardware, personnel, whatever it might happen to be for that situation. And this applies not just to IT projects, but to other projects as well. And at each of those points, there's a decision gate where somebody in authority, an executive in an agency, a group of executives, cross-agency teams, whatever it might be, are in a position where they have to make an absolute decision to go or not go to proceed with the project, so things don't just slip by and begin to happen on their own. The third phase of that is when you start to develop a project plan and you identify your needs and describe what the end in sight is going to be, and does that support with the need that you had identified earlier on in the process? And if it's not there, it's an opportunity to say, how do we compare these two and do they work together? And then finally, you have a last decision point. Do we approve it for implementation? Is it a go? The time to make all of those decisions is not when you're committed, but before you commit. Many of the agencies have those kind of rigorous development cycles. They do that as a matter of routine. But there are also some where it's more individualistic than we would say would be the ideal model. It has been suggested from time to time that you tie funding to these decision points. What that can do, obviously, is make it a great incentive for people to do it right, because they've got to justify each of those major decisions. Within agencies, the budget allocation process is often tied to this kind of a process, but it also introduces lag time into it. It's like the capital budget process. You may have to go multiple years to get a project in place, which adds to the cost of it often and reduces the efficiency of the solution. But that is one way of approaching this. There are several different approaches to
was a while ago.
Yes, I still do. Madam Chair, if I can jump in. Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Lally. Okay, I'm just going to step back because I'm not an IT person, but I am just curious. You've talked about how projects can either be successful or they can fail, and I'm just wondering if there is a scope or size or goal encompassing idea that would help to lead towards better success with a project. And maybe it's not just a greater likelihood of success, but is there more of an ideal or preferred scope? If you understand what I'm trying to... I'm just trying to wrap myself, my hands around what exactly, when we're looking at projects, how do we help lead them to be more successful rather than failing?
Madam Chair, Representative, there aren't thresholds that are magic. You can have very expensive projects that are quite simple. The scale is difficult to implement. You can have highly complex projects that are also successful. But generally speaking, as you go up the scale of complexity and size and cost, the farther you get out on those scales, the more likely you are going to be having problems someplace with maintaining focus, maintaining momentum. There's kind of an intellectual entropy that happens with a major system is it takes too long to implement. Because all of a sudden you're out there and you've been working forever and it doesn't seem like, and I've been on these, it doesn't seem like you're making progress anymore. And if that's a real indicator that you've got to step back and say, okay, are we losing the central thread of the project? In the discussions last semester, and I'm last semester. I'm an ex-teacher, I'm sorry. Diehard. Last legislative term, Representative Winkler, your bill with Senator Rest established some fairly arbitrary and fairly high thresholds for that external oversight. But that pretty much captures, when you're talking about a $10 million system or a $25 million system, the size and complexity and cost of it cry out for oversight. And the likelihood that they're going to go south on you increases with that size and complexity. That's not a hard answer that I can give you. But if it costs more, it needs more oversight.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just if I can ask again. Is there then a possibility to reduce a large, complex project with a large scope into smaller, more easily done and successful projects? I mean, when you talk about being, a semester, that is more my language. So I'm kind of thinking if I can try to figure out if you take a large project, is that possible to reduce it down?
Madam Chair, Representative, I can answer definitely it depends. There are some projects where modular development is indeed possible. You can implement different modules of the system as you go along. Other projects, until the entire system is done, you don't get any benefit from it. So breaking it up can work against your best interest. That doesn't mean that you can't benefit in almost any project from breaking it up into pieces from a project management standpoint that lets you measure your progress more evenly. If you have a project that is what they call in our industry the Big Bang project, where you're going to do everything all at once and it's going to be implemented tail end, some cases you have to do that. But doing that introduces additional risk because you don't have as much chance to test it as you go along progressively, which would be the ideal solution. Just one final slide here.
One of the things that we have that offers an enterprise technology review of large projects. I don't know if there are any comments you want to make about this experience language, but let people see that there are some laws also dealing with solar.
Right, and the Madam Chair, the laws that are in place are very useful, but they require somebody to do the follow-up on it. The law by itself, without proper oversight, is like anything else. Your children can be well disciplined and bright and well behaved and all that, but you still got to watch what they do. And this is the case here.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm.
If I might, Jalali, that the oversight, the only bullet you have up here so far, I know you're going to finish the slide here, but the Green Jobs Task Force is looking at an analogous model to OEP to align green economic development in agencies like pollution control and CCA, DEED, Office of Energy Security, and then other sort of contributory smaller agencies or that have a smaller role in green economic development. And we're looking at an OEP kind of interagency model that runs across. And thinking about the liaison, the OEP relationship with other, with state agencies, and the oversight capacity or oversight need here when you have a decentralization in some ways, and we've been struggling with this over the last month in this committee about what's the appropriate way to ensure that there's adequate oversight, internal controls, et cetera. I'm wondering if you might just be able to describe quickly the relationship and the success of those relationships with individual state agencies and OET, and if we were to bring each agency before us, what would they say?
That would be an interesting exercise, Madam Chair and Representative. I think the quality you look for most in the oversight is independence. It's true not just in IT projects, but in any kind of development activity, organizational development, building, whatever it might be. Having somebody who is not in the process and is not subject to the chain of command of the process, observing what goes on, having that independent viewpoint is very important. That's why internal auditors typically don't report to finance directors. They report to someplace else in the organization. So you've got independence and separation within that process. And so I think that one principle of independence and it obviously presumes competence, just having somebody who doesn't know what they're doing watch you doesn't necessarily make it better. But that independence is really essential in an oversight function. That can be done by a central organization like OEP. It can be done in a larger agency by somebody reporting at the top of the organization or off to the side of the organization who is independent of that. You can contract for that with private firms. There are niche firms that specialize in that kind of oversight, as well as major development houses that do that as part of what they do for other projects. But that independence is what really matters.
And to the agency liaison question, how do you think agencies might characterize the success of the OET relationship?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have a very good working relationship with most of the major agencies. So we have, for example, I sit on the steering committee for the MAPS project. One of my senior project managers sits on the driver and vehicle services project development. Another one works closely with revenue. Another one works closely with human services, and they're working with human rights and other agencies. And generally, what they tell us, sometimes off the record, what they tell us is that they appreciate that involvement because it's a check. It's a reality check for most of them. Would they like it if it was more intensive? I don't know. If it became intrusive, probably not. I don't know if all agencies feel that way because the general rule is if they don't like it, they ignore you. They don't come and confront you with your failure to perform on that. I really don't know. It would be interesting to see how they feel about that. I was going to briefly talk about this. So there's essentially five different strategies for oversight. Decentralized oversight means you leave it up to the individual agency, organization, company, whatever, to manage their own projects and provide their own oversight. And that can work, but you lose the independence in that process, the objectivity, the enterprise representation in that. That was what we had for a very, very long time in state government, and it's what happens in many states. You could have a minimal central oversight, which is basically identifying the projects that are there and what their objectives are, and then hoping when the project ends that it's been successful and you can report on that. Another approach is to gather key data on the plans and performance metrics and then track it on an intermittent or regular basis. Comprehensive oversight involves establishing that kind of professional ongoing relationship or partnership with the agency, for example, the kind we do with a couple of the major agencies, and making that the rule rather than the exception. And finally, you can have exhaustive, almost oppressive oversight, which interferes with the flow of the project and starts to substitute your judgment for theirs. And that can be very counterproductive because it interferes with the flow of the project. What we've done is to try to do this approach on the major project, and for the smaller project, try to get the information and just through our organizational contacts with those agencies, try to track, you know, how is it going, what are the issues, do we take a look at your project plan, we track the documentation that they provide to us through our enterprise portfolio, but it's more passive than active partnership in that respect. And I think there's no question we would like to do more of that, but again.
Mr. Lally, but one of the, first of all, as I understand how most of what you do is funded, you are funded from the projects that you're doing, so from the department. So,
Madam Chair, no, not typically. Our oversight functions are on general fund budgets. And right now, up until 2 weeks from now anyway, we have three senior project managers that report to me that do that liaison function with the major agencies. What we are doing to try to extend the capabilities that we have and to deal with the economic realities that we face, we're consolidating our project management activities into one organization with only an OET that looks at both the oversight functions for the enterprise and our internal project control function, which we exercise over our own projects. So you have project delivery and project oversight. And that's trying to extend the capabilities of the individuals that we have and find ways. And this may require us to change our model. Our model in the past has been that we don't charge agencies for exercising oversight. It would be a little like the revenue department charging you for the pleasure of an audit. It kind of goes against the grain. You want to do the oversight.
That's what the state auditor does.
Pardon?
That's what the state auditor does. State auditor audits local unit of government by charging them for it.
Madam Chair, I understand it's a slightly different function for them, and that's the model that they have to operate under. We have not, just as a matter of history, operated that way.
Well, we may
have to change that.
Let me read the language that exists in the statute under 16E.04. Because the risk assessment, and this is on page 3, B near the top of the page, and then I'll read something from the bottom of the page. The risk assessment and risk mitigation plan must be paid for with money appropriated for the information and telecommunications technology project. Now, isn't the money for that project usually appropriated to the agency that's doing it?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
So,
most of the time, the risk assessment is done by an outside contractor for the agency, and we simply monitor the results of that risk assessment. Our engagement in those processes is on a spectrum from fairly significant for major projects to virtually insignificant for the small ones, because there are so many of them. We do assist agencies as a consulting practice, help them develop their plans, help them develop their risk assessment structures, but we don't do that independent monitoring of the project for that.
Well, so getting down to 16E.0465, we then have this, you know, I kind of remember putting this in, but this, the Commissioner of Finance may not authorize the encumbrance or expenditure of an appropriation of state funds to a state agency for any phase of a project, device, or system subject to this section unless the office, unless OET has reviewed each phase, etc. You can read that. That seems to me to be a fairly strong
statements, although I admit when you get to the things that they're supposed to review, they're a little wishy-washier. But, you know, I'm not sure that, two, the agency is able to accomplish the goals of the phase of the project with the funds appropriated, you know, is not pretty all-encompassing. How does this 16E04-ON work? Or have you been telling us that I haven't been listening properly?
My numbers may be off here. I'm sorry, I don't have current numbers. But at any given time, there's about 300 IT projects under development in the state. They range from fairly small ones to pretty substantial ones. We approve contracts. We approve their project plans. But that approval is a paper process. We get the document. We review it. We have questions. We will highlight the questions, ask the agency. But once it's past that point, we don't have the resources to spend following up on that and see does it really go where they say they're going to go. Again, unless it's one of these major projects.
Well, maybe there's something we have to redo about how we do this. But I think the resources exist in the appropriation for the project. And as I read this, I think, you know, maybe we have to change some words in here to make it clearer that that happens. But that's why one of the models that I've suggested is that all appropriations for all information projects go specifically through your office. And so we don't have this kind of back and forth. And an information, you know, so that we get to the... Then the other example is somewhere which says whether it's, oh yeah, an E045, you know, of state or, we talk about state or federal funds of more than $1 million, which is probably an awful lot of projects that we're doing in this way. But, you know, how can, you know, I'm sure you know I want you to tell us about the health net and how that works then.
Let's go to the health net, which is not a bad example what should happen and in some cases what didn't happen. We were involved in the latter stages of that project when their commissioner came to us and said...
Oh, okay, let's stop right there. Why weren't you involved looking at this basket, I think, which is all in place then, and looking at what the cost of that must have been anticipated? Why weren't you involved at the very beginning of it?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I can't answer that. I don't know. This predates me with OEP. Typically, we would have been involved...
I mean, before... In the case the start of that predated OET, which I don't know that it did, but this language was just kind of moved from the responsibility of administration to, or finance or something, to OET. This wasn't new language in the statute.
No, so, I'm sure it existed, I think, just back in the 1990s, maybe even earlier than that. I can't answer why we weren't involved. We've had a good working relationship with them. They asked us to come in and look at the project when it was beginning to go south. We met with them, we reviewed the project. They intervened before we had to, and I'm trying to be careful because there's litigation in process around this right now. But from our standpoint, they took the right action. They took it later than they should have, in our estimation. And they will admit that as well. But the idea was that before they spent any more money on it, it wasn't going the way it should. They shut it down to reevaluate and re-strategize. And I talked, as it happened, to Commissioner Ruderman earlier today just about that. And I know there are...
Did
you anticipate
that question?
No, actually, it just came about because of our working relationship.
Oh, okay.
I know they have some significant plans in mind that I'm not at liberty to discuss because it does involve a situation with vendor litigation. They did the right thing. They did it. It took longer to get to that point than it should have, and I think they would admit that. And they learned some lessons from that. And very frankly, the lessons are when you have an incredibly complex project, and that is an incredibly complex project, one of the most I've ever seen, you have to take special care in defining it and managing it on a routine basis. And at this point, Representative Murphy, is where you start to look at is, are there ways to develop it in a segmented fashion so that you control the individual component risk? Whether that would have worked or not, I don't know. I don't understand the goals of that project well enough to know that. But certainly it's a strategy that I think they would consider under the circumstance. In the past, they've had issues with, and part of this is managerial culture, and part of it is just the size and complexity and the tendrils that reach out from that organization. A lot of people are involved in making decisions. And one of the things that makes a project more likely to be successful is having a single decision maker that's responsible for making those decisions. And that's true whether it's a building project or a technology project or anything else. You've got to have clarity of accountability in that project. And it was muddy in that project.
Madam Chair, can I follow up on that? Mr. Lally, so we have now, since HealthMatch was started, the legislation you've been referring to, requiring that state agency project leaders must demonstrate that the project will be properly managed. That's a quote. And you just mentioned this single point of decision making. So now, if DHS was going to embark on this project, would it not get into the governor's budget or... let's see, what is the other... Well, would it make it into the governor's budget without them designating a single point of managerial responsibility?
Madam Chair, first of all, it's a little over my pay grade, but first of all, it's not just a matter of a single person. It might be a single group that has the responsibility for seeing that decisions are made at each milestone to progress. That has to be controlled, and there has to be expectations managed by the executives of the organization or the agency that you're not going to take time or do these things sequentially. If you're not going to lose momentum on a project, you have to make the decisions on a timely basis and follow up on it. And that was part of the difficulty that they had.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lally, I guess what I'm wondering about is if a project doesn't have the governance structure in place on the front end, and we require in the statute that you review it, and without your review, and you have to report to us too on these reviews, does it go forward in a budget unless, because, I mean, it really, really requires you to get sort of mess with the leadership of other agencies, but that is what the statute requires. And I guess I'm curious if there really is that kind of follow through and enforcement from OET, and I understand that's not an easy thing, especially for you, because you're talking about butting heads, I guess, with commissioners in many cases in other places. But how does this happen? Does it go forward without that strict governance structure in place?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I have butted heads with commissioners and governors on occasion, so it's not that there is the issue. It's not a matter of personality. It's a matter of capacity. The time it takes to do an adequate review of a project plan is measured not in hours, but in weeks. The amount of time it takes to monitor the progress on a major system is months over the duration of that project. We simply don't have the resources to do that. Some of you will recall that we have come to the legislature three times in the past 4 years asking for additional resources around audit and compliance with these standards because we can't do it with what we have. And, I mean, I understand the budget dynamics and all the things that go on there. The fact is we had four people working on this a few years ago. We've got three now. We will have two going on into the near future. And you can't do this on an enterprise basis and do it on a shoestring. That's the simple reality of that.
Madam Chair, I still have to follow through. If you look on 16E.01 subdivision 3 duties, the office shall approve state agency and intergovernmental information telecommunication systems. And it says provide information to the legislature regarding the projects reviewed and recommend projects for inclusion in the governor's budget. And it puts you in a very, very central role in whether or not technology projects go forward. And I guess what I'm concerned about, and this, you know, the concern I have is that we have several initiatives in this budget related to technology improvements. Some of it with the Department of Finance central system, but other systems as well. And the goal of those is purportedly to save money, to make things more efficient, and help drive keep down the cost. But if we were being asked to put money into them, and not your fault that we don't give you enough money to do the job, and you're always very straight up about that. The question is the thorough review happening before it goes into the budget and is sent to us, so that we could actually believe and trust that we should be putting those resources there?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, we're talking two different situations here. We do review all the initiatives that are proposed for the governor's budget before they're included in the budget. And we have a team that we put together that goes beyond my function. It includes people from security and telecommunications and database and so on, to technologies that are involved, that review those projected initiatives for agency capability to manage it. We don't look at the business needs, that's not our area, but we look at the technical sufficiency and the approach that they're talking about before it's recommended. We make those recommendations directly to the Department of Management and Budget and to the Governor's Office. And you will see those recommendations as part of this portfolio report that will be coming out in the next week or so. But that's for prospective projects coming into the budget. Many projects don't come through the budget process. They're funded on a federal match, or they're funded out of internal agency money, or after the initial money is appropriated, there is further on pieces that come through there, and we don't follow through on those. But being very honest with you, we simply do not track what happens to those projects after they get out of here. So the project may be properly defined and the scope clear and the governance process clear at the point of inception. But things happen to projects once the development process goes, and particularly for the large, complex, long projects. But the longer it goes, the more likely you're going to have project risk within that. And that's the part where your oversight, if it's not continuous, begins to lose its effectiveness. If I didn't make that clear, I'm sorry.
Well, got a whole bunch of questions. So let's start with Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually somebody here who has done risk assessments at the state, so I think I share many of the concerns. I think just an observation is that risk assessments are seen as an expense item, and frankly, they have an extremely high value, but what I've often seen too much of is that they're done pretty far down the path of the project, and so the value, kind of the instructive value of where the problems are and how you can improve the project are lost simply because of the timing. So I think there's just an approach to risk assessments that could be improved. My question to you is, I would say that the large system failures and the Human Services Project Health Match, is that the name of it? I remember actually being brought into a bidders conference to talk about process redesign from the state down through the counties after the system had been developed, and that's frankly totally backwards. And so I'm curious whether or not your approach to oversight and assessment of these projects really takes a look at the fact that they need to be business driven. That's where the value is, that's where the return on investment is. Are we getting to a more business driven process? And corollary to that would be, I share the same concern that we've got a huge project map where there's a huge opportunity to improve the way the state does business, and I'm concerned from what I've seen and heard that maybe we aren't approaching that from as strong a business perspective and an overall change management perspective. So maybe your comments on whether in general we're doing more of a business approach and whether specifically MAPS is.
Madam Chair, Representative, generalities are always a problem. In general, what we've seen is an increasing level of maturity in approaching project definition and project management. I would like to claim that's because of our engagement with them, but in fact, the discipline of project management is beginning to be recognized for what it is. It's not just something to do. It's also a set of skills that you think you're going to do. We've worked with the agencies to try to make sure that business focus is represented in their project definition. They don't approach it as a technology, because information technology is first of all information system projects are first of all about business, secondly about information, and lastly about technology. And one of the first indicators to us that there's a problem is if we go to work with an agency and they've already selected the technology before they've done the project definition and identified the requirements and identified what the business outcome. Because that says they're chasing the business solution with something they saw at a conference or heard from a vendor or heard of somebody else had implemented. And that is indeed very much backwards. The last thing you decide on is the technology. So we're working with the agencies to have that business case process that I talked about earlier become a model. Some of the agencies do it very well, and they tie it not to the technology, but to the business case. There are, again, different levels of maturity in this whole thing with industry. Some of them are quite mature. Some of them are, I think, frankly, better than we are at it. And others are developing that and trying hard to do that. So it's a really a mixed bag. But your general comment about we have Sapphire once talked about retroactive planning, which is what you do when you want to justify a decision you've already made. And when we run into those situations where people are trying to justify the decision they've already made, whether it's because their CIO has a particular preference for a technology or their commissioner wants to take a particular approach, the alarm bells start going off that, wait a second, you've got to take it down a level and look at what the business needs that you're trying to address are. We're getting better at that, but we can get even better as we go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, specifically, thumbnail sketch observations on where you see that one coming in relative to the business-driven aspect?
Well, I'm one of the few people in the state, other than people in the Department of Finance or Management Budget, who was actually involved in both the last project, the implementation of the original MAPS program about 15 or 18 years ago, and the current one. At that point, I was one of the user executives. I was at that time the Executive Commissioner of Revenue, and they had several of us on as an advisory group. This effort is, I think, much more tied to what the business users need rather than what the technology will provide. The conundrum they face as they go into this process is that you can't afford to build your own system like that. You've got to get a product in, because the cost of development of a comprehensive finance and accounting and budgeting and personnel system would be astronomical. It would be $200 million or better. So they're looking for a solution that is a package solution. They've got a principle that they will modify it as little as they possibly can. Unlike the last system, where they did a great deal of effort in modifying the product to make it look like what they already did. I think what they're doing now is a much better approach, because they're identifying how do we have to change our business processes and our workflows to take best advantage of whatever product that we acquire, rather than how do we go ahead and make it look like it's the way we've always done things. From what I've seen sitting on with the project team on about a monthly basis, and I have one of my senior project managers that meets with them on a weekly basis, is that it's a much more mature process than it was the last time through. Does that mean we can just relax? No, I don't think so. This is just simply too expensive a system, and the implications to the state are too great to take it for granted. And as well as they're doing in directing them. And I think their concept documents and their project plans are very good. It still needs to be tracked.
And then just
thank you, Madam Chair. It sounds like you have one of those things going around. Sorry to hear that. Certainly, Mr. Lally, good to see you. And Representative Downey, your questions are, you know, are exactly right on. But one of the things that I've had the advantage of doing large systems in my office prior, and one of the things that, as we worked with the Department of Administration before in some of these same statutes, that when the OET came on board, they were much more substantial in their assistance, oversight, and help and knowledge, and much more mature in that. And we work closely with both entities, and I have to say, now, OET is only about 3 years?
About 4 years old.
About 4 years old, yes. And so I think they're really just gathering, but one of their purposes also is to increase the knowledge base and enhance the CIOs of each agency or each entity and so on. And then they work together in a very collaborative way. So my director of IT at that time worked very closely with them, and we shared a lot of knowledge because we had a lot of experience, and we were business driven. And we're not, it's called choose your policy first and then choose your technology. It's kind of like going to your tool belt and saying, gee, that's a great hammer, what can I do with it? Instead of saying, what do I need to do? And then going to your toolbox. And so, but that is what we found in my staff, saying that, wow, OET finally was the place where they didn't have to go to a vendor and ask for advice, that they had this internal government entity that was a great wealth of knowledge and was only just beginning. And so we worked in a very collaborative way with them to share our knowledge and to work with them and other entities. But I do think that at some point along the way, we need to see some results. And after 4 years, you start getting in there. I've really seen that. And I would encourage you along the way here, we need to know. And I think sometimes it's a little hard because oversight is not the same as management. The agencies and entities have a responsibility for management, because if you're going to really step into that, you're going to need way more employees than we even want to think of going to. So I think the mission and the focus and the business of what you do is oversight and accountability and shared knowledge and building that knowledge base. I think it's important. I wish that the Department of Finance and MMB would take a similar approach. We've heard about Department of Finance, MMB, and we've heard about some of the other entities that Minsky was one of them and some others, where that entity, such as you do with OET, took a stronger personal stake in seeing the success and getting engaged and involved. And I think this is a good example that I think we might even be able to see some transferable entities there between MMB now and something like OET, because in OET I see that kind of ownership and responsibility and helpfulness that is really, really good. But some of this project development process and oversight and evaluation, let's hold them accountable for what they're responsible for, and the agencies for making use of what OET has to offer.
Madam Chair, Representative Kipmeyer, thank you for your comments. I think the essential thing for us is to maintain that independence, because we can't provide oversight if our relationship with the agencies is too close. And that's the hard thing. How do you manage a positive professional relationship without finding yourself empathizing with the agency? And that's just one of the risks of trying to develop those kind of relationships. Much of what we do, I will repeat what I said earlier, is not about technology. It is about information management and business needs. We, as an organization, have been, up until this recent reorganization, heavily focused on technology. And I've personally experienced it, and I've heard from other agency CIOs and commissioners when they said, your representative came in and said, here's my solution to your problem, without knowing what the problem was. But this is the solution we had to market, and therefore it was the solution. And your toolkit example, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And our situation has to be that we step back from the technologies we provide through our service side to what does the business need? And the answer to that may not be within state government. And that's why we've expanded our exposure to vendor-provided solutions. We've also tried to get past the situation where everybody gets an individual solution to their problem. Take something like case management. I think there's probably 30 agencies in state government that need case management capabilities. Different levels, different purposes. Why would you go out and buy 30 separate case management systems or employ 30 separate case management approaches? What we are supposed to do by statute and by the direction of the governor is to try to provide that integrating analysis, looking across agencies, looking at their plans, looking at their developments, and say, yes, you have a need for a case management system, but so do we have an agency over here that has one, and maybe we find a common solution, or the basis for a common solution that you can build on and save money and simplify and allow for exchange of information. If we could do that successfully, if we could do that as well as we should be able to do for the benefit of the state, that by itself advances processes to the point that as soon as you go across those boundaries, the opportunities for oversight are much stronger because you're no longer dealing with the self-interest, the self-definition of one agency, but the more global responsibilities. And again, it takes time to do those things. Time is limited.
Thanks, Dan. Here, real quickly, after Lally, who is your private sector counterpart, if any? I'm not counseling privatization here. I'm just saying, if you didn't exist, if OET didn't exist, where could or would state agencies get this kind of service? Is there a counterpart or not really?
There are private sector firms, Madam Chair, Representative. There are private sector firms that specialize in this kind of parallel monitoring. They're mostly smaller firms. I have a predisposition for smaller firms because you tend to have more control over your engagement with them. But there are also the large development houses that do many of the applications for state government and the private sector often have an internal practice, and they will contract to provide that kind of oversight. And as long as the client is not defined to be the project, but rather the business side of it or the central oversight function, that can proceed well. In addition, many of the major companies that are out there, and we're talking the Deloitte, the IBM, the CSCs, companies like that, very large, reputable, experienced firms, often will have an internal function reporting higher up in the chain of command that says, well, our folks that are doing this project for the Department of Public Safety or the Department of Revenue, they want that project to be successful too. So they will provide that internal oversight on their own people. Not everybody does that, but it's one of the ways that you can get oversight without funding successfully.
Just one other quick question, Madam Chair. Just going back to one of your slides, you said that the determination of whether to do a project is primarily a business decision. So I just want to understand, and this is keys off what Representative Kiffmeyer said. So do you provide the service such that if a state agency, say the Department of Revenue or the Secretary of State's office, comes to you and says, should we do this or not? Is this a software-based solution? Is this an IT solution at all or not? Is that one of the services you do or not? I guess I heard conflicting things. I'm new to the committee, so this is new to me.
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, we don't typically do that. Where we have a practice where we offer solutions, we will normally know those solutions and some of the competing solutions. But typically, if, for example, the Department of Revenue, with which I'm very familiar, if the Department of Revenue, as they're going to identify their integrated tax system, is the decision to integrate tax processing the way they're trying to do it, is that a good solution? They wouldn't come to OEP because we don't know their business well enough to comment on that. But technologically, it makes sense to do what they're trying to do, to standardize your processes, integrate them, use common technologies for multiple purposes. We could advise them, and for the agencies that we're involved with, can advise them, yes, it makes sense, or no, what you're trying to do exceeds the scope of the technology you're leaning towards. And that's where we try to direct them back to that business case methodology. What do your business need? What does that imply for the requirements for the system? What do those requirements entail when you go out to find a vendor to provide a product or you develop the product internally? We typically, in state, outsource development of major systems. We may have a cadre of development staff in an agency, but in most cases, we have to go out to the private development houses for a contract staff to do it on either a turnkey basis, which means we buy a solution and they install it and then we run it, or for staff that they come in and work under our direction to develop those applications. when I say our, as an agency, we come under agency management. Occasionally, OEP gets into that development business. E-licensing is one example where it is not our system. It is a Department of Commerce system, I think. But they've asked us to oversee the development of that software package. But that's not our core competency. That's not typically what we do. We're a technology hub, and we try to address technology and information technology, the boundary, if you will, between information and the technology. We try to address that in our action, but we don't try to understand and judge whether the Department of Human Services approach to information management is the right one. We don't know what the limits are.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To this point, Mr. Lally, when you go out to get, when you have to outsource for some of these projects that you're talking about, what is the procedure for that? Is that an RFP or?
Madam Chair, Representative Bigham, part of it depends on the scale and the nature of the project. If an agency is going to be managing its own development, they may have a requirement to go out and get business analysts and programmer analysts and designers and programmers. And we have master contracts in place for pre-qualified firms that they can go out. They do a statement of work. They'll get an informal bid from several different vendors and make a selection and bring those people on board. When you're buying a system, for example, the MAPS system, where you are essentially buying a set of capabilities plus the development and the installation of that, that's typically an RFP process that's more involved and lengthier because it's much more expensive and more complex. So it depends a lot on the situation.
Okay, well, this is really just the start of this conversation. So, Cecilia, as we're going to be dealing with the issues with the possible sources of funding, or how are we even going to think about getting our hands around it? So, are there any, people will be back again at some point, certainly with a more specific development plan of that, maybe some discussion will be integrated revenue systems, or the electronic fund transfer, or the
e-license,
and so forth.
Madam Chair, I'd be delighted to come back. It's been a pleasure. I know the Office of the Legislative Auditor has undertaken a general analysis of project management capabilities and performance. We're waiting anxiously to see the results of that audit, because it looks both at our oversight role within state government as well as how agencies do their project oversight generally. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what the results of that audit are.
Well, the preliminary comments were kind of complementary to you, I think, in terms of models. But I don't know if that means, I don't know what happens when they see if you follow the model.
And I'm sure. If I mean, I think our model is good. I think our execution on that model is the great. But
okay. Well, on that note, we need to